You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
SHA-1 is broken for real. Grizzly Step threat actors seem to have a lot in common with the Carbonek gang. Notes on Distrack, also known as Shamoon. There's a Bitcoin exchange hit by DDoS. Linux patches an old vulnerability. Reuters says Symantec was in talks to buy FireEye, but the company's backed away from a deal. An arrest in the Deutsche Telekom hack. And what the vulnerability researchers found when they looked at connected cars. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Friday, February 24th, 2017. Every cryptographer who's been telling people to abandon SHA-1 can feel vindicated this week. Google announced the first successful collision attack against the algorithm. In the unlikely event you're still using SHA-1, well, please move to something better. TruStar looks at additional information on Grizzly Step the U.S. Department of Homeland Security has released. They've found that its operators, by consensus Russian intelligence services, have much in common with the Carbonek gang, including not only code, but also command and control infrastructure. This isn't to say that the Russian government wasn't behind the Grizzly Step operations, but it does suggest again the complexity of attribution. See, for example, NSA Director Rogers' recent comments on this attribution. Essentially, sure, the Russians went to work during our election. The Russian organs have long made effective use of criminal organizations, and this week Moscow revealed that its investment in cyber warfare and information operations has been larger than many defense intellectuals suspected. The level of effort deployed in information operations has especially raised eyebrows. Some say it exceeds even the propaganda campaigns the Soviet Union mounted at the height of the Cold War. Bitfinex, a major Bitcoin exchange, was hit earlier this week by a significant denial-of-service attack. The disruption occurred on Tuesday, as Bitcoin's value was reaching new highs. There's been a pattern of such disruption when Bitcoin speculation is hot, and various black hats have said they've been hired to organize DDoS against larger exchanges, but no one seems quite sure of the motive. Bleeping Computer, for example, says it's an urban myth that smaller trading platforms hire digital button men to make their bigger rivals unavailable to drive trades their way. In patch news, the Linux project closes an 11-year-old vulnerability. A Google intern, Andrei Konovalov, discovered and disclosed it. He'll release a proof-of-concept exploit showing how an attacker could gain root access probably next week after people have an opportunity to patch. Many, perhaps most analysts, expect to see a round of consolidation in the security sector over the next couple of years, but it's not arriving all at once. Yesterday, according to Reuters, parties familiar with the negotiations confirmed that about 6 months ago, Symantec had been in preliminary talks to acquire FireEye. Those negotiations came to nothing. This particular acquisition is now said to be off the table. A British subject has been arrested for last year's Deutsche Telekom hack. UK police collared the unnamed gentleman in London, executing a German warrant. The suspect is being extradited to Germany, where he'll stand trial for allegedly attempting to compromise Deutsche Telekom's service to recruit devices into a Mirai botnet. And finally, there was a fair bit of talk concerning automobile cybersecurity last week at RSA. We found the research particularly interesting when it touched on the risks associated with the increasingly connected and autonomous car, which you might think of as another big moving thing in the Internet of Things. Kaspersky looked into the security of Android apps used by 7 car manufacturers. 3 of the apps unlocked the doors. The other 4 not only unlocked the doors, but started the engine, too. This has inevitably been covered with screamer headlines saying car thieves can hack your car. It's not quite that bad, but the apps are vulnerable, and their security, while more than zero, is still penetrable. The researchers singled out 2 particularly meretricious design practices they say are accidents waiting to happen, using either SMS messages or voice commands to control a car. IBM's X-Force also got into the act. They've determined that a lot of these convenient apps, like the ones that let you honk your horn to find your car in the crowded lot at Walmart, well, those apps continue to work, even after you've sold your car. We leave the security issues of this as an exercise for the listener, particularly those listeners in the market for a pre-owned ride. So, driver, beware, especially if you buy your cars used. What would it take to get you into a compromised device today? This one has just one owner. A little old lady from Pasadena who didn't do anything with her onboard systems except click every link in the email she read on her tethered, unpatched Android phone. We mean, of course, Pasadena, California. The little old ladies of Pasadena, Maryland generally have mad hacking skills, but come to think of it, that might be a problem in its own right. One owner only. She just drove it to church on Sundays. Her grandkids said she did like to compile a lot of Python from the CAN bus. Whatever that is. I think it's some kind of long sugar cookie. Did we mention that we finance?
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. Don't struggle to align your organization's cybersecurity with business risk. Get the only solution that goes beyond reacting to threats with vulnerability and risk monitoring. You need the next evolution of MDR, and only Critical Start delivers it. Critical Start doesn't just monitor and respond to threats. They put you in control by detecting suspicious activities, quickly responding to contain threats, and identifying your most critical assets and protecting them against vulnerabilities and exposures. With continuous visibility, expert guidance, and measurable risk reduction, Critical Start has redefined what it means to manage cyber risk. Demonstrate provable security maturity to your leadership while positioning your program to achieve the greatest risk reduction per dollar spent. Stop fearing risk and start managing it with Critical Start. Visit CriticalStart.com and request a demo today. That's CriticalStart.com.
And joining me once again is Dr. Charles Clancy. He's the director of the Hume Center for National Security and Technology at Virginia Tech. Dr. Clancy, welcome back. We wanted to touch base today about this push to have election infrastructure categorized as critical infrastructure. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah, so right after the 2016 presidential elections controversy associated with potential Russian hacking or so-called hacking of that election, the Department of Homeland Security decided to announce the designation of election infrastructure as one of the segments of critical infrastructure, which is kind of a really interesting outcome. So I think this is an opportunity for a potential investment in cybersecurity resources, for example, in R&D resources from DHS, to look at how we might design more secure election infrastructure. But it's been interesting that over the last couple of weeks, there's been a lot of pushback from states in particular who feel as though this designation will somehow interfere with their ability to kind of deploy and operate the election infrastructure that they have right now. So it's kind of an interesting debate. I think one issue with it is that many of the other critical infrastructure sectors that are designated by DHS do not have federal jurisdiction. For example, the telecommunications infrastructure is perhaps regulated by the FCC, but not operated by the government. So I don't know that I quite agree with the state's opinion that it's federal overreach in terms of such a designation. On the other hand, I don't know that it really would have made any difference in the most recent election, given the sort of alleged attacks against our election process had nothing to do with the voting infrastructure itself, but rather the perception of the voters as they walked into the ballot booth.
Many people look at the way that our election system is distributed among the states and the amount of control that the states have as actually being a feature of the system that makes it more resistant to a broad-based hacking.
Indeed, yeah. That was, of course, one of the claims that the states made in their pushback against the DHS finding that this should be critical infrastructure, was that it's already a very distributed process that doesn't rely heavily on internet infrastructure, but rather local jurisdictions making phone calls with election counts sort of upstream to state voting authorities. So as long as there's, I guess, strong authentication in those processes, we'll be fine. But it'll be interesting, as we see in many technology sectors, the push to modernize involves more and more automation and reliance on internet-connected infrastructure. So we'll have to see, as voting technology matures and states adopt more sophisticated techniques, whether or not that impacts the overall system's security posture.
All right, Dr. Charles Clancy, thanks for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
My guest today is Jason Porter. He's vice president of AT&T Security Solutions, where he's leading a team that's taking part in a new IoT cybersecurity alliance. In addition to AT&T, the alliance includes IBM, Palo Alto Networks, Symantec, and Trustonic.
We know that it takes a community to solve, you know, really important challenges like securing IoT. We need the best of breed in when it comes to areas like managing devices and endpoints. We need leaders in securing data and applications. We need people with a history of managing connectivity and understanding threats and how to manage those. And so we formed this alliance to go after this challenge together as a community.
So take me through, what are some of the goals that you're hoping to achieve with the alliance?
Yeah, absolutely. As an alliance team, we are really focused on education, trying to understand really what are the most problematic issues facing IoT security, and educating the industry and customers on what can be done to make IoT more secure, what those challenges are and how we might solve them. We also want to influence over time through that education, standards, policy, regulations potentially ultimately that help to make IoT security the forefront and standard in deployments. And then we also obviously, where appropriate, will come up with solutions that really solve IoT security. And we're looking at it largely from a vertical viewpoint. Take industrial IoT. That is very different than, say, connected car or wearables. So each community has different challenges, different attack vectors, a different attack surface area that we've got to be able to understand and communicate those challenges, communicate solutions, and even potentially develop solutions for.
So take me through the process of how the group is planning to work together.
Yeah, so we worked very much like our foundries. We took the model after our AT&T foundry model. So at the foundries, we bring a collection of, really talented folks together to work on solving problems. And so in this situation, we're bringing together a targeted community, and we'll get together and bring in customers who have real needs and issues, and between that community, understand what are the, highest priority items that we need to go solve for, and really work collectively in sort of, in agile development terms, it's like a scrum team working together to go develop, to go solve a problem.
And from the outside, for those of us, keeping tabs on what you all are up to, will you be publishing? How do we track your progress?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do have milestones. We haven't published our milestones, obviously, but you can expect to hear from us. We will be publishing results. We will be communicating research so that it's really there for the broader industry's benefit. And obviously, you'll start to hear more about our next steps, whether it's moving towards standards or solutions. You'll continue to hear a steady drumbeat of that. You'll also hear about us expanding the alliance, because as we continue to move forward, we expect that we will need to bring in more members who can help us fill gaps and solve special challenges, take defibrillators in healthcare or insulin pumps or oil rigs, right? We're definitely going to need to expand our expertise in these other areas as we continue to solve and tackle new challenges.
Looking at the list of participants in the alliance, it strikes me that, there are areas where some of you are probably, healthy competitors with each other. Why do you think it's important for organizations to join together, as a community to try to tackle these big problems?
Yeah, this is one of those areas that really it's beyond competition. We've got to go solve industry problems for our economy, for end customers. we really need to not be encumbered by traditional competitive lines and really go solve problems. And that's why we've, you know, collected, as you mentioned, some might view some of the participants as competitors, but in this environment, we're all committed to go solve challenges that we think raise the collective boat or raise the opportunity for the industry as a whole, protecting financial integrity and even physical safety in many cases. Not every company can invest at the levels of the Alliance team members to go and tackle cybersecurity at this scale. And so we really need to help support companies that maybe don't have those resources, don't have data scientists and threat platforms and multiple SOCs and analysts. And so really it's an obligation of those who do to participate in these kinds of alliances to help protect maybe those with more limited resources.
That's Jason Porter. He's Vice President of Security Solutions at AT&T. And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and zero trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.